This Morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Trump fires back. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Wednesday, June 1st, glad you could be with us. And here's what's up this hour.
Donald Trump takes the media to task for questions about his donations to veterans groups. He says he's never gotten such bad publicity for doing a good deed. We'll explain the dust-up.
Police in Cincinnati now say they will take a look at the actions of the family of that little boy who slipped into a gorilla enclosure at the local zoo.
At a shooting in Houston over the weekend, police say an Army veteran with PTSD fired 212 rounds.
And the price that men pay for taking a part-time job.
For women, there was basically no difference between having a part-time job or a full-time job. They got called back about the same. For men, though, there was a big penalty. Less than half as many men with a part-time job got called back as did men with a full-time job.
Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Lubsdorf on why men take a hit for seeking a part-time gig. He's here in about 25 minutes. Cincinnati police have changed their mind about the weekend incident at the zoo. They now say they are investigating the parents of the three-year-old boy who fell into a gorilla enclosure, which led officials to shoot and kill the 400-pound animal in order to rescue the child. Authorities said the investigation will look at the parents' actions leading up to the incident, then huddle with prosecutors about potential charges. Meanwhile, animal rights groups want penalties. Michael Budke of Stop Animal Exploitation Now wants the zoo to be fined.
Depending on how the USDA does this and which of the citations they include, this could be in tens of thousands of dollars.
Meanwhile, Ron McGill at Zoo Miami says the Cincinnati Zoo had no choice.
He was banging the child on the rocks. This was becoming an escalated situation for that gorilla. He was becoming more and more upset. It was a horrible, horrible situation, but that decision had to be made because had it not been made and that child had been badly injured or, God forbid, killed, we'd be having a much bigger discussion about why didn't the zoo do something sooner.
Zoo authorities said the boy climbed over a 3-foot-high railing, walked through some bushes, and fell about 15 feet into a shallow moat. Shortly after that, the zoo's dangerous animal response team killed the gorilla as it dragged the boy through the water, ignoring a signal to retreat. The boy's family, by the way, said he's doing just fine at home. The zoo director says the facility remains safe for its 1.6 million annual visitors, but it's looking for ways to potentially improve. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has released a full list of veterans groups he says received $5.6 million in cash he raised for them. You'll recall he held a fundraiser in January for veterans instead of attending a GOP debate. But critics say he'd been shamed into making the contributions by media pressure. Meanwhile, he used a news conference yesterday to lash out at reporters and gave her a number of different reasons why the donations were announced, including that he needed time to vet the groups.
Instead of being like, thank you very much, Mr. Trump, or Trump did a good job, everyone say, who got it, who got it, who got it? And you make me look very bad. I have never received such bad publicity for doing such a good job.
About a dozen veterans groups contacted by the Associated Press, meanwhile, said checks were cut the day of a Washington Post report questioning Mr. Trump's donations. Some wonder whether the media have given the same scrutiny to Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton and her Clinton Global Initiative. If and when Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders drops out of the Democratic presidential primary, is it reasonable that Mr. Trump would pick up some of his supporters? If no, then why not? If voters are looking for an anti-establishment candidate, if so, how many supporters might defect to the Trump campaign? Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Janet Hook. Janet, what are we looking at?
Both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are candidates who are running very kind of populist campaigns outside the mainstream of their parties. And Donald Trump is saying he's counting on getting some support from Bernie Sanders supporters after the Democratic primary is over. And what I found from studying polls and interviewing a lot of supporters that that may be a shaky reed to lean on if he's counting on Bernie Sanders supporters.
Did you say that Trump quoted something expecting upwards of 40% of Sanders supporters? I mean, did he make that number up, seriously?
I believe that he took it from one exit poll from the primary in West Virginia, and it was a very widely discredited, it's an exit poll result that had very kind of complicated factors in it. Every other major poll shows him getting very small amounts of Bernie Sanders supporters, so he's probably latching onto that number because it's about as good a number as ever has ever been out there for him. Our poll found that when we looked at the average over 4 months of Wall Street Journal polling, when we looked at if there was a head-to-head match between Trump and Clinton, that the Sanders supporters, only 10% of them would go to Mr. Trump.
Is that enough to, I don't know, I'd put Mr. Trump in any kind of significant advantage or lead?
Well, it depends on how he's doing with the rest of the population. At this point, it's really impossible to say what the edge is that he needs. The point is that I think he is overreading the power of the populist theme that they're both striking, because while they both are very campaigning hard against the status quo and the establishment, the roots and the direction, the roots of their campaign and the anger that their supporters feel is very different, and the direction they'd take the country is very different.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Janet Hook. Her piece is called Donald Trump Hopes for Boost from Bernie Sanders Supporters. How is it that Mr. Sanders is campaigning against the status quo? He's been in Congress for 25 years.
Well, because he's been kind of an outsider in Congress for 25 years. He hasn't been affiliated with the Democratic Party until he ran for president. He was an independent. He's the only Democratic socialist in Congress. I think that being in the Senate hasn't been much of a, doesn't really undercut his claim to being an outsider who's challenging the establishment.
Yeah. So that said, there are some commonalities between the two, I guess, generally speaking, right, where they might share some voter overlap?
Well, I think they share some thematic overlap in that both of them are very very critical of international trade agreements. So they both make that a big issue on the campaign. Probably Trump makes it a bigger issue than Bernie Sanders does. They both have been critical of the campaign finance system. And actually, I think the most interesting point of comparison is how much neither one of them are really come from the establishment within their party. I mean, Donald Trump hasn't been a Republican his whole life, and Bernie Sanders, as I said, has just become affiliated with the Democratic Party.
Yeah. And Sanders has said that, I mean, he will virtually do whatever he can, right, to keep Mr. Trump from winning the presidency. So to think that some of Sanders supporters might go to the Trump camp, I guess, is a stretch.
Yeah, it is a stretch. I mean, there are some, and a couple that I talked to were one man that I spoke to about it was kind of an unemployed person who wasn't particularly strongly affiliated with the Democratic Party, said that he wanted to vote for Bernie Sanders, but probably in the general election would vote for Trump, mostly because he just so dislikes Hillary Clinton. So it's sort of more of an anti-Hillary vote than a pro-Trump vote.
Thanks, Janet. Wall Street Journal reporter Janet Hook. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery, grow your contact list, and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
If you're looking to grow or relocate your business, there are three numbers you should know. 10, 2000, and 6. 10 stands for Michigan's ranking as a top 10 pro-business state. 2000 is the number of unnecessary regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years. And 6 stands for Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climate. All those numbers add up to the one state that has all that and more, Michigan. Go to michiganbusiness.org to learn more. Good Wednesday to you. Houston police have released new details about a mass shooting that took place Sunday. Investigators say the suspect, Army veteran Dionisio Garza III, fired 212 rounds during the rampage that left two dead and 6 wounded in a neighborhood in the western part of the city. Police say that Mr. Garza came to Texas from California and arrived on Saturday to see some friends. They believe that the shooting location was random. Friends said he served in the Army in Afghanistan and had suffered PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder. Houston Police Lieutenant John McGowan.
His family indicated that he wasn't feeling right, and he left to come here to hang out with his friends and try to find work here.
Authorities believe Mr. Garza broke into a tire store and stayed there all day before the shooting. Police said he intentionally turned off his phone and went off the grid Saturday afternoon. They then say he came out of the tire shop and confronted a customer and shot him. The man died at the scene. The shooter then retrieved another gun and shot at passing cars and police vehicles. He even struck a line to a gas station, which then caught fire. A sniper fired 4 rounds, including the shot that eventually killed Mr. Garza. 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, if you're traveling to Europe this summer, the State Department wants you to be aware of your surroundings. The federal government is alerting U.S. citizens traveling to Europe to heightened risks of terrorism. State Department spokesman John Kirby says there should be extra caution taken amidst the European Soccer Championships and Tour de France.
Just to stay vigilant. And we're certainly not discouraging travel to Europe or other tourist destinations or even these events. Just that we want to make sure that that they stay vigilant, that they stay aware as they attend or they travel.
Also, the Catholic Church's World Youth Day in Krakow, Poland in late July, expected to draw up to 2.5 million visitors, will result in stricter security screenings. The UN Children's Fund today issued a stark warning to Iraqi troops and Islamic State militants in the battle for Fallujah to spare the children, the most vulnerable among the tens of thousands of civilians who remain trapped by the fighting for control of the city. Backed by aerial support from the U.S.-led coalition, Iraqi government troops more than a week ago launched a military operation to recapture Fallujah, which has been under control of the extremist group for more than 2 years. People in parts of southeast Texas are dealing with record-high flooding, and more rain is coming. Yesterday, the Brazos River reached 54.4 feet in Fort Bend County, and up to 3 more inches of rain expected later this week. Flooding along the river has killed 6 people in Texas. Donald Trump appears to be finding some friends in North Korea. The presumptive Republican presidential nominee has been getting good press this week in the North's carefully controlled media, first in an opinion piece that praised him as wise and full of foresight, then today in the official mouthpiece of the ruling Workers' Party itself. And if you live in Delaware and know any happy chickens, the state's Agriculture Department wants to hear from you. Residents have a little less than a month to enter their pictures of happy chickens in the state's Best Poultry Photo Competition. The top image will be published in the 2017 Delaware Agriculture Calendar.
A chicken calendar?
Mm-hmm.
A happy chicken calendar.
I don't know what a happy chicken looks like. But
I don't know either. Do they smile?
I guess.
Do they laugh? I don't know.
They probably laugh.
Smiling eyes.
At us.
Yeah. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Get away and stay at Lexington Inns and Hotels. With great rates and exceptional quality, our guests always come first. Visit LexingtonHotels.com today. Most of the time, we roll our eyes at Hollywood celebrities, but this time, there just might be a lesson to be learned about prenuptial agreements. Look at the situation involving the divorce of actor Johnny Depp and his wife Amber Heard, who were married less than a year and a half. Kelly Grant at CNBC.com says not having a prenuptial agreement can be a costly mistake, not just for Johnny Depp, but for you as well. Kelly, what's up here?
We keep hearing about celebrities that make some really interesting financial mistakes and choices, and some of the news last week was that Johnny Depp, in the midst of his divorce, does not have a prenup. So we started looking into this and sort of seeing what does this mean for your typical consumer. You know, obviously we're not all going in with Johnny Depp's celebrity or his assets, but there are some pretty good reasons for even your typical consumer to maybe consider getting a prenup.
All right, like what? What should be some of the factors here?
Well, some of the factors would be, you know, if you're older, if this is a second marriage and you have kids from a previous relationship, and if you do have assets that you're coming in with, not necessarily celebrity level or, you know, even like 6 figures, but, you know, something that you had that was your own that you want to make sure continues to be your own if something goes awry.
Mm. So Johnny Depp is 52. I think Amber Heard is 30. Should that have been some sort of reason? I don't know. Is age gap an issue?
Well, age is definitely an issue. It was an interesting thing as I'm talking with a lot of lawyers here, you know, and they say something that it really helps with prenups, particularly as you're older. It's not even about planning for divorce, but even in the possibility of death. A prenup can require your spouse to essentially let your will be as it is. If you wanted to, say, leave all of your assets to kids from a prior marriage, there are, in a lot of states, there are particular laws that would prevent a spouse from being disinherited. So in a prenup, you could essentially require that new spouse to void their interest in the will so that you could leave everything to your kids instead of having to leave a portion of it to that spouse.
We're speaking with Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. Her piece is called "Don't Be Like Johnny Depp, Get a Prenup." What if you're young, you're just out of school, you have no debt, and you work in similar jobs, you don't have any assets or a 401k or anything like that? Is it necessary then?
Well, you know, that might be just down to your individual preference and, you know, other factors we hear, and especially for younger people. It's really common if the family wants the prenup for one reason or another. Maybe there's a family business that's going on or just family money that they want to be really cautious about what that spouse's entitlement is to that money.
Got it. All right. And what if you're already married?
If you're already married, there are cases we hear where you might want to get a postnup, although the lawyers we talked to said it's a little bit more difficult to get that usually because, you know, as you're both being represented by lawyers, if the law already favors one party, and usually that's not the party that's going to be asking for the postnup, it's very difficult to get both people to agree to that. Where they say that actually they do see a lot of that successfully done is when a married couple is looking to start a business. So maybe, you know, you're laying out how that's going to be handled, or a little less happily, that if one party has already been caught cheating, that sometimes we hear the spouse who was wronged will come back and say they're willing to work on the marriage, but now they want to, you know, get some more legal rights.
All right, thanks, Kelly. Kelly Grant at CNBC.com. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
You appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades, and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. So go to Harry's.com right now and enter code 8866 at checkout. Code 8866.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, June 1. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Police now say they will investigate the parents of the boy who fell into a gorilla enclosure at the Cincinnati Zoo. Texas is bracing for more rain today and the cresting of the Brazos River. Questions for Google. Nothing to commemorate Memorial Day with the Google Doodle? Chris Sale of the White Sox loses at Rock, Paper, Scissors and has to agree to sign an autograph for a Mets fan. Cameras disguised as wall-mounted coat hooks found in women's bathrooms around the Florida Keys. And why Seattle is pleased with the NBA Finals matchup. That story in about 20 minutes. And here's a damned if you do, damned if you don't story on the job scene. A researcher at the University of Texas at Austin sent out thousands of fake resumes to test how gender and work history affected callbacks by potential employers looking to interview the simulated job candidates. He found that for unemployed men, taking a part-time job may be nearly as damaging to their future career prospects as simply staying home. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Lubsdorf. Ben, give us the findings.
Well, there is a sociologist at the University of Texas named David Padula, and he decided to test how different work histories and gender affected how people get in the door at new jobs if they get called back for a job interview when they send in a resume. So he sent out several thousand fake resumes and tracked who got a call back for an interview, and he found that there was a big gender gap in terms of people who, on these fake resumes, had most recently worked at a part-time job. For women, there was basically no difference between having a part-time job or a full-time job. They got called back about the same. For men, though, there was a big penalty. Less than half as many men with a part-time job got called back as did men with a full-time job. And that indicates that there is a penalty that men are paying for working part-time that women aren't paying.
Interesting. All right. Did he come up with a reason for this?
He said that the dynamics underlying this are probably difficult to disentangle. He did a separate survey trying to gauge the opinion of hiring managers. He said that it appears that hiring managers, when they see a part-time job on the resume for a male job applicant, they see it as a sign that the candidate is less committed to the job than they do with women. It's not a pattern they see for women. And so it indicates that it's not just what kind of job you have, but also who you are that's affecting how hiring managers look at you and decide whether you're going to be a good job candidate.
Did it matter whether or not a man, say, was already employed full-time and just wanted a little extra money?
It didn't test for that, but he did test for unemployment and working at a low-skill job, something like a retail clerk, or working at a temp agency, and found that generally working at a part-time job, working at a low-skill job, even being unemployed, they were all pretty much the same for men. In fact, it looks like it's not that much better for men to be in a part-time job as to be basically unemployed and applying.
Wow, that's really something. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal economics reporter Ben Lubsdorf. His piece is called How Men Can Pay a High Price for Taking a Part-Time Job. What are some of the lessons here or potential solutions, if any?
I think it points to how people can think about what jobs they take when they're looking for a job. If you're out of work and you are a woman, it looks like there's not much penalty if you take a part-time job while you're looking for a full-time job. For men, though, it looks like you do pay a penalty if you have an option between a part-time job and a temp job working at a temp agency. It looks like your odds of getting a full-time job down the line would be improved if you took the temp job rather than the part-time job.
We suspect that this has been going on, say, even before the most recent recession?
Well, the study doesn't go back before that long, but it doesn't seem like there's any reason to think that these dynamics have changed. The thing that has changed, though, is that part-time work is more common now. We see still, even now with low unemployment, an elevated number of people who are in part-time jobs and say they want a full-time job. The group that the BLS calls part-time for economic reasons or involuntary part-time workers, there's a larger number of those than there were before the recession, and this might indicate that it's going to be difficult for some of those folks to move into full-time jobs down the line.
Thanks, Ben. Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Lubsdorf. 21 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could spend some time with us on this Wednesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, grammar police, take note. I'm looking at you, Gordon Deal. There's some new capitalization rules you should be aware of. As of today, internet and web are no longer proper nouns and have been downgraded in written form so that they no longer need to be capitalized. The changes go into effect today with the new edition of the AP Stylebook, a manual followed by many journalists offering a guide to the usage of words, style, spelling, and punctuation. Internet and web join website and email as tech-based words that have gotten lowercase stature in recent years, and ABC News speculates that Wi-Fi could soon be joining them. Thankfully, for capital letter enthusiasts, and you know who you are, there's one prominent holdout, PDF, which for now will remain capitalized.
Ah.
So take note.
Well, that's an abbreviation.
Okay.
So.
Sure. That makes sense. Okay. I didn't even think about that. So look, I'm just going with ABC told me.
No, I understand. I understand. And agree with the others.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't think I've ever been someone who capitalizes internet. Definitely not web. Internet maybe on occasion, but never web.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a time, you know, when almost everything, they talk about in this story, almost everything was capitalized sort of at one time in the beginning. And then as we sort of figure out that it doesn't refer to anything specific, it's a very generic term, then the capital goes away.
What about interwebs?
Interwebs. Yeah, sure. I'll still keep capital. Every time I use that, I'll still put a capital I on that for sure. And if you've been following the NBA for the past few years, you know that banging betting against the Golden State Warriors, even when they're down 3-1, is ill-advised. One Cleveland Cavaliers fan did just that when he promised to eat his shirt if the Warriors won the Western Conference Finals. His bravery was enhanced by the fact that he made the promise after Game 6, when the Warriors had already won 2 straight games to tie up the series. After the Warriors advanced to the finals, to his credit, the fan, known on Reddit as PartyX Dirty Dan, followed through on his promise, eating a few barbecue sauce-covered bites of a t-shirt that read Cavs in 6 in a video posted on YouTube, which in just 2 days has been viewed nearly 350,000 times.
Wow.
And it's not really a very exciting video, to be honest.
Just a guy eating pieces of his shirt.
Yeah, little tiny pieces of his shirt, because he says, quote, he didn't want to, like, die. So, so that's why he didn't eat the whole shirt. But he took out scissors and took little snippets of it, dips it in the barbecue sauce, and then downs it.
Well, listen, isn't everything better with a little barbecue sauce on it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you could eat almost anything. I'd eat this paper probably with barbecue sauce on it.
A little oil, throw it on the grill. Yeah.
Exactly. There we go.
Sure. Paint it with a little barbecue sauce.
Barbecue memories coming back.
Thank you, Mike. 15 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery, grow your contact list, and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
Thanks for spending time with us. Would it surprise you to learn that concussions in children could be vastly underreported? A new study finds children who have suffered a concussion are more likely to be diagnosed in their pediatrician's office than the emergency room. This suggests current concussion stats may be mostly underreported, since only children diagnosed in the ER are included in counts by the CDC. ABC News says the study found approximately 82% had their first concussion visit at a primary care site like a pediatrician's office. 12% were diagnosed in the ER, 5% diagnosed from a specialist, and just 1% directly admitted to the hospital. Additionally, 1/3 of those injured were under age 12, showing that not just high school athletes are at risk. Though the finds are significant, it may be hard to generalize the data for a wider population, since just a single hospital network was studied here. It's 9 minutes now before the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, under pressure to account for money he claimed to raise for veterans and irritated Donald Trump, lashed out at the news media for pressing the issue and listed charities he says have now received millions of dollars from a fundraiser he held in January.
Instead of being like, thank you very much, Mr. Trump, or Trump did a good job, everyone say, who got it, who got it, who got it? And you make me look very bad. I have never received such bad publicity for doing such a good job.
Phone calls to all of the groups by the Associated Press brought more than 24 responses. About half reported checks dated May 24th, the day the Washington Post published a story questioning whether Trump had distributed all of the money. Federal prosecutors are seeking to seize the proceeds of 2 life insurance policies held by Syed Farouk, who with his wife killed 14 people in a shooting rampage in San Bernardino in December. Farouk took out a policy in 2012 worth $25,000 and another in 2013 worth $250,000 and named his mother as a beneficiary. The U.S. Attorney's Office says assets derived from terrorism against the U.S. are subject to forfeiture. President Obama today plans to weigh in on the campaign with a speech outlining how he views the choice facing voters this fall. The president's remarks will be a departure from the selective approach he has taken on the presidential race so far. Home prices are back near record highs across the country amid rising demand and supply constraints, a sign that the housing market recovery of the past 5 years is gaining some strength. A national index shows prices have clawed their way back to within 4% of their 2006 peak, a steep rise from the near 30% decline at the bottom in 2012. And we're a little less enamored with fast food than we used to be. According to the American Customer Satisfaction Index, fast food scores a 77 out of 100, compared with 82 for sit-down restaurants. Our favorite fast food fast-food chain by a wide margin is Chick-fil-A, which scores an 86, followed by Chipotle and Panera. At the bottom, McDonald's, Jack in the Box, and Taco Bell.
Really? McDonald's at the bottom? At one point, the largest restaurant in America, right?
Yes. Probably in the world it still is, but in general, doesn't score well.
How about that? But those French fries, though. The French fries. The French fries at McDonald's compared to other fast-food joints, yeah. Get that double cheeseburger meal, you're good to go. Upgrade to a vanilla shake. It's 6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us, and a good Wednesday to you. Well, there's one group especially pleased that Oklahoma City collapsed in the Western Conference Finals, blowing a 3-1 lead to Golden State in the NBA playoffs. And that's fans of the old Seattle Supersonics, who lost their franchise to OKC back in 2008. The Wall Street Journal says on Saturday, Seattle baseball fans watching the Mariners at Safeco Field saved their loudest cheers of the night for when the final score from the Thunder's Game 6 loss flashed on the Jumbotron. Monday night at Stout, a bar in Seattle's Capitol Hill, where 33-year-old salesman Miles DeCaro watched Game 7, says about two-thirds of the 300 patrons there were wearing either Sonics or Warriors gear. How deep are the scars? Mr. DeCaro says he still won't buy Starbucks, the company based in Seattle, because he resents the company's chief executive, Howard Schultz, for selling the team to Oklahoma businessman Clayton Bennett back in 2006. Mr. Bennett was unable to secure funding for a new arena in Seattle and relocated to Oklahoma City. Game 1, NBA Finals, Cleveland at Golden State, tomorrow, 9 o'clock Eastern. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. More than you can know, this still feels like a dream. 1 minute you're cheering on Big Smooth, and boom, there goes your team. I just can't watch the Thunder as they dominate the league. Because it should be KJR that brings Calabro's voice to me.